Welcome to Lifelines with your host, Seashell, aka the Liveaboard.
Go out on the ocean, send me up on my pony, on my boat.
So, this is the show about what it's like to live full time on a boat in general and in Avalon specifically. Right-o, so we got a heavy duty show today. What is worth doing? That's our topic. That's our topic today. It seems appropriate at the turnover of a new year to assess our actions and resolve to improve our experience and behavior on the planet and decide what is worth doing. A boating friend of mine from up north sent me a care package a while back, which included in among the beef jerky, the dog treats, and the tuna cans, a box set of old classic volumes printed in 1936. One of the slender books is called Life Without Principle by Henry David Thoreau, and as it speaks to this question of what is worth doing, I will be reading relevant excerpts throughout the program today. I frequently ask myself what is worth doing, particularly at times of confusion, isolation, loneliness, loss, a crossroad in my life. It's a harder question than what is not worth doing, only because it is far easier to feel vehement about what I am not willing to do. For instance, all the money in the world is not worth doing a job that makes me despise myself and want to curl up and die. An offhanded slight from a nobody is not worth getting all worked about. Holding grudges is not worth the energy it requires to remember and rekindle the hurt, and so on. Setting out on a boat for the unknown is worth doing, to me, because life is short and then you die. Might as well have some adventures on the way. Taking on a difficult job is worth doing if it provides not only financial security, but enjoyable work and opportunity for growth and learning. Caring about a small white dog is worth doing because every moment spent practicing loving something expands your capacity for love. Okay, so before it gets too heavy, I'll give you a bit of music to percolate on the topic a bit. And in case you're wondering, you are listening to KISL Avalon 88.7 FM, and we have Who Woulda Thunk It by Greg Brown, if it will cooperate. Probably won't, because that's the way it goes around here. I did it. Greg Brown.
Say I could walk all night, and we could and we did. Down a gravel road to the tiny town, and the door always open. Now we say I could walk all night, it's not true. We can't walk all night, no, because we don't want to. We want a bed and a blanket, some light breakfast sometime tomorrow. We want a bed and a blanket, some light breakfast, sometime tomorrow. And I sing it now, hey, 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 who woulda thunk it? Hey, 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 who woulda thunk it? We used to say I could eat a horse, and we could and we did. Fast food joints in the middle of someplace, on the way to someplace else. Now we say I could eat a horse, it's not true. We can't eat a horse, no, because we don't want to. We want something from the cookbook, that new one with the great graphics. Something from the cookbook, that new one with the great
traffic, so when I sing at night, hey, 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 who would have thunk it? Hey, 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 who would have thunk it? We used to say, I don't care if I never have any money, long as I have my sweet honey and a shack in the woodland. I would say I don't care if I don't have money, but it's not true. We can't live without money, no, because we don't want to. We want one of those and two of those, and oh, that one looks neat, wrap it up. Put it on my MasterCard. Put it on my Visa and I sing it now. Hey, 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 who would have thunk it? Hey, 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 who would have thunk it? I don't care if I never grow old. I'm gonna flame, gonna burn, take one quick turn and be gone like James Dean. Now it don't say that it's too late to die young, so we sit at the table long after supper and the good wine. Here's what we sing, we go, hey, 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 who the funk is? Ah, hey, hey, now, hey, hey, now, who would have thunk it? Hey, 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 who would have thunk it?
It's Greg Brown, who would have thunk it? Henry David Thoreau is on our list today of people to discuss. He was an author, poet, and philosopher in Massachusetts in the 1800s. He wrote and spoke about conscientious objection, direct action, environmental issues, abolition, tax resistance, civil disobedience, and simple living. What's not to like about the guy? I feel an affinity for him because he's not shy about speaking the goodness of the heart, and he manages to do it without being smarmy or preachy. Here is the opening of his 1936 book, Life Without Principle, in which he explains the premise for the book. At a lyceum not long since, I felt that the lecturer had chosen a theme too foreign to himself, and so failed to interest me as much as he might have done. He described things not in or near to his heart, but toward his extremities and superficialities. There was, in this sense, no truly central or centralizing thought in the lecture. I would have had him deal with his privatist experience as the poet does. The greatest compliment that was ever paid me was when one asked me what I thought and attended to my answer. I am surprised as well as delighted when this happens. It is such a rare use he would make of me, as if he were acquainted with the tool. Commonly, if men want anything of me, it is only to know how many acres I make of their land, since I am a surveyor, or at most what trivial news I have burdened myself with. They never will go to law for my meat. They prefer the shell. A man who once came a considerable distance to ask me to lecture on slavery, but on conversing with him, I found that he and his clique expected 7/8 of the lecture to be theirs, and only 1/8 mine. So I declined. I take it for granted when I am invited to lecture anywhere, for I have had a little experience in that business, that there is a desire to hear what I think on some subject, though I may be the greatest fool in the country, and not that I should say pleasant things merely, or such as the audience will assent to, and I resolve accordingly that I will give them a strong dose of myself. They have sent for me and engaged to pay for me, and I am determined that they shall have me, though I bore them beyond all precedent. So now I would say something similar to you, my readers, since you are my readers, and I have not been much of a traveler. I will not talk about people 1,000 miles off, but come as near home as I can. As the time is short, I will leave out all the flattery and retain all the criticism. Henry David Thoreau. And you, dear listener, have tuned in presumably to hear something beyond the love ballads of the day, and so we commence our exploration of what is worth doing. Thoreau asks it a different way. He says, let us consider the ways in which we spend our lives. This world is a place of business. What an infinite bustle! I am awaked almost every night by the panting of the locomotive. It interrupts my dreams. There is no Sabbath. It would be glorious to see mankind at leisure for once. It is nothing but work, work, work. I cannot easily buy a blank book to write thoughts in. They are commonly ruled for dollars and cents. An Irishman, seeing me making a minute in the fields, took it for granted that I was calculating my wages. If a man was tossed out of a window when an infant, and so made a cripple for life, or scared out of his wits by the Indians, it is regretted chiefly because he was thus incapacitated for business. I think that there is nothing, not even crime, more opposed to poetry, to philosophy, aye, to life itself, than this incessant business. Mm-hmm. There is a coarse and boisterous money-making fellow in the outskirts of our town who is going to build a bank wall under the hill along the edge of his meadow. The powers have put this into his head to keep him out of mischief, and he wishes me to spend 3 weeks digging there with him. The result will be that he will perhaps get some more money to hoard and leave for his heirs to spend foolishly. If I do this, most will commend me as an industrious and hard-working man. But if I choose to devote myself to certain labors which yield more real profit, though but little money, they may be inclined to look up on me as an idler. Nevertheless, as I do not need the police of meaningless labor to regulate me, and do not see anything absolutely praiseworthy in this fellow's undertaking, any more than in many an enterprise of our own or foreign governments, however amusing it may be to him or them, I prefer to finish my education at a different school. I am also of this mind. I have never been motivated by money. I can remember playing Monopoly with my brother, the only game he ever wanted to play, and falling asleep shortly after starting because the repeated transactions of hotels and industries seemed like a complete waste of time. It would be much simpler if one were motivated by money. You would have to have no better reason for doing anything than it turns a profit. There is a next-generation Star Trek troll-like species called Ferengi who operate on that principle. Ferengi is a real word. It was used in ancient times, according to some Wikipedia article, to describe Europeans disparagingly. I don't know if the real Ferengi had a profit-only motivation, M.O., but I've met more than a few humans who use the Ferengi principle. From their point of view, my search for life's buffet of experience through meandering is a waste and a sign of slacking and not worth doing. Here's Thoreau's take on this. If a man walk in the woods for love of them half of each day, he is in danger of being regarded as a loafer. But if he spends his whole day as a speculator, shearing off those woods and making earth bald before her time, he is esteemed an industrious and enterprising citizen, as if a town had no interest in its forests but to cut them down. Most men would feel insulted if he were proposed to employ them in throwing stones over a wall and then in throwing them back, merely that they might earn their wages. But many are no more worthily employed now. For instance, just after sunrise one summer morning, I noticed one of my neighbors walking beside his team, which was slowly drawing a heavy-hewn stone swung under the axle, surrounded by an atmosphere of industry. his day's work begun, his brow commenced to sweat, a reproach to all sluggards and idlers, pausing abreast the shoulders of his oxen and half turning round with a flourish of his merciful whip while they gained their length on him. And I thought, such is the labor which the American Congress exists to protect, honest, manly toil, honest as the day is long, that makes his bread taste sweet and keeps society sweet, which all men respect and have consecrated. One of the sacred band doing the needful but irksome drudgery. Indeed, I felt a slight reproach because I observed this from a window and was not abroad and stirring about a similar business. The day went by, and at evening I passed the yard of another neighbor, who keeps many servants and spends much money foolishly while he adds nothing to the common stock, and there I saw the stone of the morning lying beside a whimsical structure intended to adorn this Lord Timothy Dexter's premises, and the dignity forthwith departed from the teamster's labor in my eyes. In my opinion, the sun was made to light worthier toil than this. I may add that his employer has since run off in debt to a good part of the town, and after passing through Chancery, has settled somewhere else, there to become once more a patron of the arts. Mm-hmm. Okay. On this island, people take whatever jobs they can get, and sometimes have hard feelings about the ways they are used in that simple pursuit of a living wage. No different on the mainland, I guess. Let's rest for a moment with a song about work. Work Worth Doing by Theodore Lovely. Thank you.
working hard at a work worth doing. Oh, live your life this way.
And that's Theodore Lovely, Work Worth Doing, from the amazing Spotify group of songs that you can pick up anything. The road continues. The ways by which you may get money almost without exception lead downward. To have done anything by which you earned money merely is to have been truly idle or worse. If the laborer gets no more than the wages which his employer pays him, he is cheated. He cheats himself. If you would get money as a writer or lecturer, you must be popular, which is to go down perpendicularly. Those services which the community will most readily pay for it, it is most disagreeable to render. You are paid for being something less than a man. The state does not commonly reward a genius any more wisely. Even the poet laureate would rather not have to celebrate the accidents of royalty. He must be bribed with a pipe of wine, and perhaps another poet is called away from his muse to gauge that very pipe. As for my own business, even that kind of surveying which I could do with most satisfaction, my employers do not want. They would prefer that I should do my work coarsely and not too well, I not well enough. When I observe that there are different ways of surveying, my employer commonly asks which will give him the most land, not which is most correct. I once invented a rule for measuring cordwood and tried to introduce it in Boston, but the measurer there told me that the sellers did not wish to have their wood measured correctly, that he was already too accurate for them, and therefore they commonly got their wood measured in Charleston before crossing the bridge. The aim of the laborer should be not to get his living to get a good job, but to perform well a certain work, and even in a pecuniary sense, it would be economy for a town to pay its laborers so well that they would not feel that they were working for low ends, as for a livelihood merely, but for scientific or even moral ends. Do not hire a man who does your work for money, but him who does it for love of it. And for that, we will go to Jean Grisman. If it's not worth doing, don't do it. Which is a commentary. Which is not Thoreau.
Number 23. If it's not worth doing, be sure not to do it. Steve Forbes once told me, don't be the slave of your inbox. Just because something's there doesn't mean you have to do it. That's good advice for work and for your social life. Learn how to decline an invitation in a polite but firm manner. If something doesn't mean anything to you, try to get out of doing it.
Okay, so Jean Grisman seems to feel like you can get out of doing stuff you don't want to do. This is not quite what I had in mind. Neither was it what Thoreau had in mind. He says, it is remarkable that there are few men so well employed, so much to their minds, but that a little money or fame would commonly buy them off from their present pursuit. I see advertisements for active young men as if activity were the whole of a young man's capital. Yet I have been surprised when one has with confidence proposed to me, a grown man, to embark in some enterprise of his, as if I had absolutely nothing to do, my life having been a complete failure hitherto. What a doubtful compliment this is to pay me. As if he had met me halfway across the ocean, beating up against the wind, but bound nowhere, and proposed to me to go along with him. If I did, what do you think the underwriters would say? No, no, I am not without employment at this stage of the voyage. To tell the truth, I saw an advertisement for able-bodied seamen when I was a boy, sauntering in my native port, and as soon as I came of age, I embarked. He is a little bit of a sailor in him. This is from the 1936 booklet called Life Without Principle. The community has no bribe that will tempt a wise man. You may raise money enough to tunnel a mountain, but you cannot raise money enough to hire a man who is minding his own business. An efficient and valuable man does what he can, whether the community pay him for it or not. The inefficient offer their inefficiency to the highest bidder and are forever expecting to be put into office. One would suppose that they were rarely disappointed. Perhaps I am more than usually jealous with respect to my freedom. I feel that my connection with and obligation to society are still very slight and transient. those slight labors which afford me a livelihood, and by which it is allowed that I am to some extent serviceable to my contemporaries, are as yet commonly a pleasure to me, and I am not often reminded that they are a necessity. So far I am successful, but I foresee that if my wants should be much increased, the labor required to supply them would become a drudgery. If I should sell both my forenoons and afternoons to society, as most appear to do, I am sure that for me there would be nothing worth living for. So my neighbor out at the boats was about to go on a fishing trip with a friend and his dog, and he was wearing a t-shirt that says, "I have not won my million yet." I assume the shirt is for the lottery. Sanctioned gambling. Obviously, the hope or expectation that one could chance their way out of working is far more compelling than doing the work needed to develop a passion for the vocation. I have bumped into a few future millionaires through inheritance, and they found little motivation to do anything with themselves, as they could simply buy their way in or out of situations. I always felt extremely sorry for those poor, empty characters, and not a little annoyed that their abundance would be wasted or mismanaged through lack of vision. The same could be said of the other extreme of the spectrum, the individuals who lack passion and drive and see welfare as their rightful due. Back to Thoreau. Merely to come into the world the heir of a fortune is not to be born, but to be stillborn, rather. To be supported by the charity of friends or a government pension, provided you continue to breathe by whatever fine synonyms you describe these relations, is to go into the almshouse. On Sundays, the poor debtor goes to church to take account of stock and finds, of course, that his outgoes have been greater than his income. In the Catholic Church, especially, they go into chancery, make a clean confession, give up all, and think to start again. Thus, men will lie on their backs, talking about the fall of men, and never make an effort to get up. Now, I have completely lost my train of thought here, because I'm switching back and forth between this 1936 book and my little notes, and thinking about music, and there's this ginormous dog outside. He's a Saint Bernard. Of the largest variety, I think. And I wonder if maybe he came over on the boat, because I've never seen him before. And if so, what sort of a ginormous muzzle did he have to wear? Oh, he's so heavy and doesn't want to go where he's supposed to go. Oh. Anyway, distracted. So, I'm going to give you a little music. I'm going to give you a little crazy music. Because you might be going a little crazy at this point, because this is more talk than you're used to, I'm pretty sure. Here is Patsy Cline.
Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I? What in the world did I do? Oh, crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you. Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying, and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
That's Patsy Cline singing Crazy, and you are listening to KISL Avalon 88.7, though you may doubt it because there's so much talking going on. We're talking about what is worth doing. In 1936, Henry David Thoreau says that there was little discussion of work done as a glorious endeavor. There's no celebration of effort and industry, something one could take pride in and improve upon. And yet, all of the best people I know now have a strong work pride ethic and will cite the importance of having a work day well spent as being crucial to their happiness. This is the crazy part, hence the song. Case in point. Here in Avalon, you may be familiar with the local newspaper. There are two, but I'm referring to the one that appears in color. It turns 100 years old this month. It would be a fine thing if we could feel pride about that fact, but in truth, there is little about that fatuous ad rag that can claim to even be close to journalism. If you have a different opinion, I invite you to call in and tell me why. And that would be 310-510-7469. Tell me why it should be considered a newspaper. There's no news in it. It makes the community look as if we are too dumb to have pride in how we're seen as a group. The publisher and editors have never lived in Avalon and are throwing together as many as 15 other weekly small-town papers, just like the one I'm mentioning, in other Southern California communities, equally as unserved by the paltry efforts of this cast of Ferengi. This paper is a vehicle for legal notices, ads, and press releases. Full disclosure, I have been working there, attempting to provide content and proofreading, but I have lately given that up with that idea of any actual stories to be used, because no one will ever print them. The exceptions of this paper are Chuck Liddell's historical commentary and Jim Watson's stories of Avalon gone by, and many people have called in to say that those two articles are the only reason they might ever get a subscription. The treasure trove of future historical content such as Jim and Chuck now provide is in jeopardy, as there will be no future record of current-day Avalon activities. The publisher and editor are too lazy to find out what actually happens every week and write about it, or even let someone else write about it. As one resident said to me the other day, it's as if sixth graders are writing that thing and I don't bother to read it. Well, guess what? Thoreau has thoughts about the news, too. Let's go back to Thoreau. It seems safer, right? The title wise is, for the most part, falsely applied. How can one be a wise man if he does not know any better how to live than other men? If he is only more cunning and intellectually subtle? Does wisdom work in a treadmill? Or does she teach how to succeed by her example? Is there any such thing as wisdom not applied to life? Is she merely the miller who grinds the finest logic? It is pertinent to ask if Plato got his living in a better way or more successfully than his contemporaries, or did he succumb to the difficulties of life like other men? Did he seem to prevail over some of them merely by indifference, or by assuming grand airs, or find it easier to live because his aunt remembered him in her will? The ways in which most men get their living, that is, live, are mere makeshifts and a shirking of the real business of life, chiefly because they do not know, but partly because they do not mean any better. The rush to California, for instance, and the attitude not merely of merchants but of philosophers and prophets, so-called, in relation to it, reflect the greatest disgrace on mankind. That so many are ready to live by luck and so get the means of commanding the labor of others less lucky without contributing any value to society. And that is called enterprise. I know of no more startling development of the immortality of trade and all the common modes of getting a living, the philosophy and poetry and religion of such mankind are not worth the dust of a puffball. It's pretty harsh. So is it worth getting irate that future generations of island residents are being robbed of their history archives due to incompetence by the controlling so-called media company? I could say it's not my problem. I'm not second or third generation islander. I just got here. But the loss will only be noticed when it's too late, when the records have not been kept and the residents are uninformed. Decisions will be made whether you are aware of them or not. They will affect you if you live on this island. The day of the one Wrigley benign dictatorship is long over, and it is possible to interject an opinion at this point if you feel it is worth doing. That's what we're talking about. What is worth doing? Thoreau, in his 1936 book, Life Without Principles, spends some pages talking about the literal gold diggers of his age, spending inordinate capital and energy trying to make it rich in California and Australia in that day's version of playing the lottery. And then, as now, the advice from elders was to not look too closely at how you earn your money. In which we go to Most Reverend Seniors, page 15. Most Reverend Seniors, the Illuminati of the age, tell me with a gracious, reminiscent smile, betwixt an aspiration and a shudder, not to be too tender about these things, i.e. making money, to lump all that is, make a lump of gold of it. The highest advice I have heard on these subjects was groveling. The burden of it was, it is not worth your while to undertake to reform the world in this particular. Do not ask how your bread is buttered. It will make you sick if you do, and the like. A man had better starve at once than lose his innocence in the process of getting his bread. If within the sophisticated man there is not an unsophisticated one, then he is but one of the devil's angels. As we grow old, we live more coarsely, we relax a little in our disciplines, and to some extent cease to obey our finest instincts. But we should be fastidious to the extreme of sanity, disregarding the jibes of those who are more unfortunate than ourselves. And I think what he means by more unfortunate than ourselves is that they're not as sane. And then, as now, there are plenty of individuals less endowed with sanity than we could wish for. And I was going to save the crazy for that, but instead I'm going to give you a little relief from my voice, and we're going to go to the Sinister Minister. Thank you. Bella Fleck, the sinister minister. Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. A little breather. We are talking about what is worth doing today in this ongoing topic. And it's an experiment in more talk than you're used to. Usually more than any one individual wants to think about. This much talk. Add to that my list of worth doing, knowing yourself. Investigating the ugly bits and limitations as well as the laudable characteristics. I have mentioned before that I think maintenance is worth doing, although not always easy to do. And if you are hanging in there with this part rant, part reflection, then you have a goodly amount of self-curiosity and willingness to consider the more difficult bits of life. I laud you. I return to my touchstone, Henry David Thoreau and his 1936 musings on life without principle, in which he cannot find anyone who wants to have these conversations. I hardly know an intellectual man, even, who is so broad and truly liberal that you can think aloud in his society. Most with whom you endeavor to talk soon come to a stand against some institution in which they appear to hold stock, that is, some particular, not universal way of viewing things. They will continually thrust their own low roof with its narrow skylight between you and the sky when it is the unobstructed heavens you would view. Get out of the way with your cobwebs. Wash your windows, I say. In some lyceums, they tell me that they have voted to exclude the subject of religion. But how do I know what their religion is, and when I am near to or far from it? I have walked into such an arena and done my best to make a clean breast of what religion I have experienced, and the audience never suspected what I was about. The lecture was as harmless as moonshine to them, whereas if I had read to them the biography of the greatest scamps in history, they might have thought that I had written the lives of the deacons of their church. Ordinarily, the inquiry is, where did you come from, or where are you going? That was a more pertinent question, which I overheard one of my auditors put to another once. What does he lecture for? It made me quake in my shoes. Thoreau was not a mellow surfer boy dude by any stretch of the imagination. He brooded about the heavy, dark business of the internal life. He expressed his dissatisfaction with his fellow man, which must have made him wildly popular with the general public. He even delves into the arena of the media. To speak impartially, the best men that I know are not serene, a world in themselves. For the most part, they dwell in forms and flatter and study effect only more finely than the rest. We select granite for the underpinning of our houses and barns. We build fences of stone, but we do not ourselves rest on an underpinning of granite truth, the lowest primitive rock. Our sills are rotten. What stuff is the man made of who is not coexistent in our thought with the purest and subtlest truth? I often accuse my finest acquaintances of an immense frivolity, for while there are manners and compliments we do not meet, we do not teach one another the lessons of honesty and sincerity that the brutes do, or of steadiness and solidity that the rocks do. The fault is commonly mutual, however, for we do not habitually demand any more of each other. He references Kossuth, which is a Hungarian guy at the time, and how he was put through the media. We rarely meet a man who can tell us any news which he has not read in a newspaper or been told by his neighbor. And for the most part, the only difference between us and our fellow is that he has seen the newspaper or been out to tea, and we have not. In proportion as our inward life fails, we go more constantly and desperately to the post office. You may depend on it that the poor fellow who walks away with the greatest number of letters, proud of his extensive correspondence, has not heard from himself this long while. I do not know, but it is too much to read one newspaper a week. I have tried it recently, and for so long it seems to me that I have not dwelt in my native region. The sun, the clouds, the snow, the trees say not so much to me. You cannot serve two masters. It requires more than a day's devotion to know and to possess the wealth of the day. We may well be ashamed to tell what things we have read or heard in our day. I do not know why my news should be so trivial, considering what one's dreams and expectations are, why the developments should be so paltry. The news we hear, for the most part, is not news to our genius. It is the stalest repetition. You are often tempted to ask why such stress is laid on a particular experience which you have had, that after 25 years you should meet Hobbins, Registrar of Deeds, again on the sidewalk. Have you not budged an inch, then? Such is the daily news. Its facts appear to float in the atmosphere, insignificant as the sporules of fungi, and impinge on some neglected thallus or surface of our minds, which affords a basis for them, and hence a parasitic growth. We should wash ourselves clean of such news. Of what consequence, though our planet explode, if there is no character involved in the explosion? In health, we have not the least curiosity about such events. We do not live for idle amusement. I would not run round a corner to see the world blow up. So he doesn't want to see the world blow up. I used to listen to NPR, but it does not come in on my radio so easily. Perhaps I care so much for Avalon and her ups and downs now because my world has shrunk down to the size of this rock. My perspective has become myopic in the extreme. The mainland, the continent, other rocks where I will never set foot in this lifetime, have their own set of important events every day, and it doesn't matter one jot if I know about it or they know about me. To live on this island is to be insignificant. Page 21. All summer and far into the autumn, perchance, you unconsciously went by the newspapers and the news, and now you find it was because the morning and the evening were full of news to you. Your walks were full of incidents. You attended not to the affairs of Europe, but to your own affairs in Massachusetts Fields. If you chance to live and move and have your being in that thin stratum in which the events that make the news transpire, thinner than the paper on which it is printed, then these things will fill the world for you. But if you soar above or dive below that plane, you cannot remember nor be reminded of them. Really, to see the sun rise or go down every day, so to relate ourselves to a universal fact, would preserve us sane forever. Nations? What are nations? Tartars and Huns and Chinamen? Like insects they swarm. The historian strives in vain to make them memorable. It is for want of a man that there are so many men. It is individuals that populate the world. Ah, yes. So, maybe it's not such a shame that the normal avenue for extracting and exchanging opinion and event is lamed by ignoble lassitude. Even when you step back, it's all a bunch of noise, far from the truly worthy moments such as sunrises and sunsets, as Thoreau says. Then what of it? Of course, if the cause of that brilliant pink sunset is the buildup of smog from the relentless machinery of the human population, ignorance is only bliss while you are still breathing easily. Then Thoreau gets very patriotic on page 25. America is said to be the arena on which the battle of freedom is to be fought. But surely it cannot be freedom in a merely political sense that it is meant. Even if we grant that the American has freed himself from a political tyrant, he is still the slave of an economical and moral tyrant. Now that the republic, the res publica, has been settled, it is time to look after the res privata, the private state, to see, as the Roman Senate charged its consuls, ne quid res privita detrimenti caperet, that the private state receive no detriment. Do we call this the land of the free? What is it to be free from King George and continue the slaves of King Prejudice? What is it to be born free and not to live free? And then he goes on about much of the action in the 1800s, which fortunately we have for the larger part gone by, although I have to say in my inbox today I received something about the Republicans wanting to impeach Obama, and it just makes me ill. So at any rate, that would be politics. Let's see, I've talked about politics, religion, and what are the other things you're not supposed to say? Again, I tell you, if you don't like what I'm saying, please call 310-510-7469. Tell us a different story. It is talk radio, but if I'm the only one talking, then you'll either have to listen or turn off the radio. I would think so. Okay, so I began this diatribe with the question of what is worth doing. That's really my aim here. And what is your answer to that question? A lawyer acquaintance once asked me why I should bother to draw or print cartoons about being a boater, implying that it was a waste of my time. I answered, why do anything? I wish to inspire, amuse, record, perfect the story I have to tell. The story is worth telling. It's all I have to offer. Why bother help someone bicker about money or goods? Is the fallout from a lengthy and bitter divorce worth the cost of the fight? The lawyer, handsomely paid, will say yes. Because they have Ferengi blood in them, no doubt. But the former couple, dragged through horror and rage spurred on by the lash of the vindictive litigation, they have been harmed beyond all hope of recovery. I think you need some music here. I'm going to give you some Boomtown. I do have a soft spot for Greg Brown, and Boomtown is kind of what's happening to Avalon right now. We're starting to try to boom a little bit. Boomtown.
Here come the artists with their intense faces, with their need for money and quiet spaces. They leave New York, they leave L.A. Here they are, who knows how long they'll stay. It's a boom town, got another boom town. And it'll boom just as long as the boom has room. Here come the tourists with their blank stares, with their fanny packs, their penny millionaires. Something interesting happened here long ago. Now where people used to live their lives, the restless come and go. And it's a boom town, got another boom town. It'll boom just as long as the boom has room. Nice to meet you, nice to see you in a sheepskin coat made in Korea. Welcome to the new age, the new century. Welcome to a town with no real reason to be. Except it's a boom town, got another boom town. It'll boom just as long as the boom has room. The rich build sensitive houses and pass their shit around. For the rest of us, it's trailers on the outskirts of town. We carry them their coffee, wash the shiny cars, hear all about just how lucky we are to be living in a boom town. Got another boom town. It'll boom just as long as the boom has room. The guy from California moves in and relaxes. The natives have to move, they cannot pay the taxes. Santa Fe has had it, Sedona has too. Maybe you'll be lucky, maybe your town will be the new boomtown, got another boomtown. It'll boom just as long as the boom has room. It's a boomtown, got another boom town. It'll boom just as long as the boom has room.
That was Greg Brown. Apologies there. I never know what you're going to get when you get the live version. Okay. In case you think I set myself up as kind of judge on all of this, think again. I am merely struggling through a puzzle in a public way. Thoreau bases much of his 1936 thinking on Christian foundations in the philosophical sense rather than the pious, self-righteous manner that some pitch. I've left out that bit and some of the references to accounts of his day which do not have any meaning for us 78 years later. And it could be argued that I've left out the context of his monologue, but you are welcome to read it for yourself in its entirety. Life Without Principles is the name of the skinny volume we've been reading from. I doubt it's on Amazon, and most definitely not on Kindle. What? Prove me wrong. He has a last bit to say. Those things which now most engage the attention of men, as politics and the daily routine, are, it is true, vital functions of human society, but should be unconsciously performed, like the corresponding functions of the physical body. They are infrahuman, a kind of vegetation. I sometimes awake to a half-consciousness of them going on about me, as a man may become conscious of some of the processes of digestion in a morbid state, and so have the dyspepsia, as it is called. It is as if a thinker submitted himself to be rasped by the great gizzard of creation. Politics is, as it were, the gizzard of society, full of grit and gravel, and the two political parties are its two opposite halves, sometimes split into quarters, it may be, which grind on each other. Not only individuals but states have thus a confirmed dyspepsia, which expresses itself, you can imagine, by what sort of eloquence. Thus our life is not altogether a forgetting, but also, alas, to a great extent, a remembering of that which we should never have been conscious of, certainly not in our waking hours. Why should we not meet, not always as dyspeptics to tell our bad dreams, but sometimes as eupeptics to congratulate each other on the ever-glorious morning? I do not make an exorbitant demand, surely. That was 1936, Hunter David Thoreau, sharing it with you on the radio. Surely a first in KISL history to be reading 1800s philosophers at you. Okay, if you have lasted this long, I do congratulate you. Feel free to blather back at me either during a musical interlude, of which there will be now many, or on the internet at seashell@kislavalon.com. Tomorrow the new year will turn over. That evening is called Silvesterabend in Germany, a time to start over and make things right. Rewind your good intentions and set them spinning again. May your prospects for a rich internal life be bright, and may you always be clear on what is worth doing. And now, for a little music, I'm giving you more Greg Brown, because I just love Greg Brown. What can I say? Just a bum.
I saw a man, he's a well-dressed man, he had a tan. From the Yucatan, he had a car. He looked like a star. I said, hey, don't I know who you are? But when he glanced into my eyes, I saw with such a big surprise that he's afraid that he's just a bum. Someday, when all his stuff is gone and he's left without a dime, time and money, when all you got is time and you can see him standing on the corner with a 90 beard and the bright red eyes, oh. Guy, he's a pal of mine. I said, hey, you say I'm doing fine, I'm moving up the ladder. Rung, 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 I'm gonna get my million while I am still young. But at night, when he's had a few, his eyes say different, and his tongue, they say I'm afraid that I'm just a bum. Someday,